The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
The first passage is Psalms 39, 4 through 13. O Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Surely for nothing they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather. And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all of my transgressions. Do not make me scorn of the fool. I am mute. Do not open my mouth, for it is you who have done it. Remove your stroke from me. I am spent by the hostility of your hand. When you discipline a man with rebukes for sin, you consume a moth what is dear to him. Surely all mankind is a mere breath. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give me the ear to my cry. Hold not your peace at my tears. For I am a sojourner with you, a guest like all my fathers. Look away from me that I may smile again before I depart and I am no more. Psalms 90, 1 through 4. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the world, the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like watching a watch in the night. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, Lord, how long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. This ends the reading of the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Kate. This summer's been flying by, huh? Somebody was just commenting on that yesterday. But it's not over yet. It isn't over yet. And so what that means is we're still in our summer series. We're still continuing on in this series that is focused on walking with God. And the big idea I'm going to do a little bit of, as we're getting closer to the end, I feel it's important to keep trying to bring the big idea back into focus. The big idea for the series has been to cast a vision. This may sound obvious, for what it might look like for us to walk with God, because this is what the scriptures teach, that we were created for this very purpose, to know and to walk with God. And so what we've been trying to do these last few months is to walk through some of the most essential and practical points of connection between us and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because walking with God should always involve the gospel getting traction in our lives. And by the gospel, I mean the person and work of Jesus Christ. Something that he, Jesus, fully accomplished in the past and that is yet somehow still alive, still active in this present moment, and that somehow holds great promise for the future, because the gospel is good news for all of time. For back then, for right now, for what's to come, past, present, future. And from that perspective, I think that you probably have heard me say this before. I tend to think of the gospel as being kind of like a gem or a jewel of some kind. You can imagine maybe like a really big diamond in your hand, this most valuable item that is mesmerizing to look at, and it's multifaceted. It's got all these little surfaces on it that you can run your fingers over and just marvel at. And I point that out because we can sometimes tend to think of the gospel in simplistic ways. We might just think of it as a past tense sort of a thing. So for example, I could think of the gospel as this thing that I encountered 25 years ago, marvelously, incredibly. This thing that met me in my sin, that offered me forgiveness, that offered me redemption. But I could just see it is that in that only, is this thing that happened once upon a time. While failing to see it is something that holds great relevance, power, and promise for me both now and on into the future, later on. And if that is my concept of the gospel, that it's just this thing that happened to me back there, and then now I'm on to other things, then my concept of the gospel is small. It's limited. If that's your concept of the gospel is small. It's limited. Because again, walking with God will always involve the gospel getting traction in our lives. Okay, and this will involve our past, it'll involve our present, as well as our future. And so this is something, as I'm saying this, you might be thinking this right now. This is something that obviously we need to be very mindful of. It needs to be stirred up in our lives. It needs to be nurtured. We need to be aware of it. We need to be on the lookout for how it's looking to get traction in our lives. Because it's intended to have inroads, trying to muster up as much like walking language as I possibly can here. It intends to have inroads into every phase and into every area of our lives. Not just some things, not just at some times, but all things for all of time. As one person put it, the gospel is not just the ABC for our lives, it's the A to Z. Okay, it's not just the beginning, it's the beginning and it's the end. It's not just the means, it's the means to the end, and it is the end itself. And so it's meant to get traction in our lives in all sorts of ways, in our relationships. If you recall, going back, you know, maybe towards the beginning of this series, we talked about loving community. And if you recall, we talked about how the gospel holds the power to both create and to birth and to develop loving communities. What else? We talked about loving obedience, how the gospel holds the power to rewire our whole motivational system, I guess if you can call it that, in such a way that the script gets flipped within us. Because we tend to think about things one way, and then the gospel comes in and reframes the whole thing. Instead of the tagline being, I obey, therefore he must love me, the tagline becomes, he loves me, and therefore I obey. You remember this? And so this new motivation that the gospel produces, it holds the power to ripple out into all kinds of things in all kinds of ways. For instance, it can develop us into those who have integrity. We talked about this several weeks back. Or, as we learned just last week from Mike O'Leary, it can meet us in our anxiety. And it can chip away at our anxiety because it gets us turned around. Rather than us being completely turned in on ourselves, when the gospel speaks into our lives, it gets us turned around. It has the power to turn us around so that we can see God, so that we can see others, so that we can walk with God, so that we can walk with others. Now, there's my big picture reminder for us as to what this series is really about. And the other reason that I shared it is because hopefully that's going to prepare us for our main focus for this morning. Our message, maybe you saw that at the top of your bulletin, page 5 there. Our message this morning is entitled, Walking Circumspectly with God. Now, hearing that, you may be thinking to yourself, circumspectly. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, nor do I know how it might be practical or relevant to my life. So, Doug, you're going to have to help me out here. Here's what it means. In a nutshell, so I'm going to start small and we'll kind of build out from there. To be circumspect essentially means to be mindful. This is something that I've already been talking about. It's a little bit more nuanced than that, but that's a good start. But the word circumspect, it carries this idea of awareness, to be aware. To be aware of the tree or the trees close at hand, as well as to be aware of the forest from the trees, the up-close context, the bigger picture all together at the same time. Its most basic meaning comes to us from the Latin, and it simply means just to look around. To be circumspect is just to look around, to be observant. According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it means, and this I think is helpful, to consider, to be careful to consider all circumstances and possible consequences, to be prudent. And in a very particular sort of a way, this is precisely what we're hearing in the thoughts and the prayers of David and Moses. Psalm 39 that was read, that's from David. Psalm 90, that's Moses. And both of them are looking at their lives. They're looking out at the world. They're considering time. They're considering all kinds of various circumstances. And they're saying, oh, man, my time here is brief. My life is a breath. I'm just a shadow. I'm like a shadow. I'm here and then I'm gone. God, help me. Help me to be mindful of this sobering reality. Teach me about this. Help me to live my life, not in ignorance, not with my head in the sand, not with my head in the clouds, but to live my life in light of this most difficult truth. Meet me in it. Provide joy along the way. Provide satisfaction in the midst of this hard reality. Provide meaning. Provide me with a new motivation. Help me to walk with you in a mindful way, to walk circumspectly with you, because you're the eternal one. My life is in your hands. My hope is in you. And between these two passages, we encounter a very significant juxtaposition. You're probably already catching on to it. On the one hand, we're confronted with the brief and uncertain nature of our lives. Then alongside of that, on the other hand, we're confronted with the eternal, unchangeable nature of God. And those two things, if you combine them, you know, like peanut butter and jelly or something like that, they really set us up with a lot to think about. They really set us up with a lot to be mindful of. They also help us pull together an outline. So here's my outline, okay? We're going to consider the finite nature of our lives. We're going to consider the infinite nature of God. And then the last thing we're going to do is to ask the question, how do we live in light of both of these things? So again, the finite nature of our lives, the infinite nature of God, and then how do we live in light of those two things together? So to begin with the finite nature of our lives, and both David and Moses articulate this really, really well. David says, O Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days? Let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths. Anybody know what a handbreadth is? It's just the length of your hand, essentially. It's like 4 inches, he's saying. Five, however big your hand is. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath. And then he says, Selah. And a lot of people, you know, have somewhat of there's a bit of an agreement on what this might mean, that it essentially means stop and just be mindful for a moment. Think about what was just said. Meditate on this very thing. And then he follows up by saying something very similar. Surely a man goes about as a shadow. Moses, he says things a little bit differently, a little bit more concisely, but it's the same idea that's coming across. In verse 3 of Psalm 90, he says, You, God, turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. And so they're both openly acknowledging this thing that very few of us want to even think about or talk about. Many of us are working very hard to avoid and working hard to somehow like put off and keep at a distance for as long as we possibly can. This most troubling reality, it's gotta be the most troubling reality, right? That every last one of us, unless Jesus kind of radically breaks in and intervenes sometime during our lifetime, every last one of us will pass into the grave. It's this inevitable, very hard thing, hard reality for us to think about. And who wants to think about this? Who wants to think about this? It's kind of morose, Doug. Why are you bringing it up at all? Well, I'm bringing it up because David and Moses brought it up, right? I'm putting it back on them. They brought it up. Not me, but now I'm bringing it up. They feel that that this is somehow a really important thing to think about. They see this as an essential consideration, something that we simply must be mindful of, so much so that they even pray about it. They pray that God would give them an even greater awareness of it, a greater degree of awareness. Let this overwhelming thought overwhelm us more. It seems really morose, right? It seems kind of gloomy. Again, David pleads with God. Notice the exclamation point at the end of the first statement that he makes here. He says, O Lord, make me know my end and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. I need to understand this better. I need to get a hold of it. Moses in verse 12 of Psalm 90 says, teach us to number our days. So now Moses is dragging us into it. David was just talking about himself. Moses, he drags us into it. Thank you, Moses. He says, teach us. Give all of us a greater awareness of just how finite we are. Help all of us to better understand the brevity of our lives. Now, why would he do that? Why is this so important? Well, he tells us why. He says so. Same verse. Teach us to number our days. Why? That we may gain a heart of wisdom. Moses seemed to think that there was wisdom to be found in us having awareness of our finite condition. The idea, of course, being that by us knowing that our days are numbered, that might somehow cause us to live differently, to think about our lives differently, to approach our lives, to prioritize our lives in a new way. I heard an interview very recently between two men in their 50s, and they were joking about this very thing that we're talking about here. One said that they were beginning to wake up earlier, not on purpose. Like, this is a thing that it hasn't happened to me yet, but this apparently is a thing that happens as we get older, that suddenly our alarm clocks become irrelevant. We don't need them anymore. We just wake up really early in the morning. So they were joking about this, and the guy who mentioned it, he said something to the effect of, this must be God's way of saying, wake up and start living because your time is almost up, all right? Can't sleep in anymore. Got to get up. Wake up. The other guy laughed, and he said, we need to start taking bigger bites. Thought that was an interesting way of putting it. We need to start taking bigger bites. We need to take in more. Be more mindful. Walk more circumspectly. Live more fully. Teach us to number our days, Lord, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Moses and the guys from this interview I mentioned, they're all essentially saying the same thing. Don't let us foolishly waste the time that we've been given before it's up. I assume that this makes good sense to us, right? I mean, this is reasonable. It's logical stuff. It's hard to argue with. And so why is it such a hard thing for us to actually face, though? Why are we so reluctant to pray these kinds of prayers? I mean, have you ever prayed a prayer like that? Why do we want to ignore this? Why are we trying to keep it at bay? And if I had to guess, I would say that it's because it's just too hard. I mean, it's just too hard to face. It's too hard to live with. It's too heavy of a truth. It's scary. It's gloomy. These are some pretty, to this point, these are some pretty gloomy passages in these two scriptures right here, honestly. Who wants to knowingly embrace this frame of mind? Ignorance is bliss, right? Isn't that what they say? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Sometimes it sounds like a better idea to me. I mean, I got to tell you, there's a tremendous temptation for me. The world seems crazy. The world is crazy. I don't think it seems crazy. The world's nuts. Death and heartache loom large. In some days, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to be mindful of it. It's scary. It's gloomy, it's painful. I'd rather just turn my back on it. Ignorance is bliss. And I would be surprised if anyone in this room can't identify with the very thing that I'm saying right now. We all have days like this. sometimes more than just days. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Ignorance is bliss. That may be true. Okay? For a time, that may be true. But it isn't wise. There's a difference. It isn't wise. It won't give us hearts. I think it's really interesting that that's the word. It won't give us hearts of wisdom. And it won't lead us into deeper connections with God. It won't lead us into deeper conversations with God if we're just going the route of bliss. If we're trying to put our head in the sand about this. If anything, I think this is also logical. If anything, if we're avoiding this reality, it'll lead us to avoid God. It'll cause us to avoid reality itself. Whereas acknowledging it, acknowledging this hard truth and facing it provides us with a really unique opportunity to walk with God and to walk with others, which is what we were created to do. It provides us with a space to really engage with God in true and raw ways that can transform us. In the face of just how small and finite Moses feels here, I think that's the vibe that's coming across, what does he do? What does he do? How does he face it? Listen back to verses 1 through 4 of Psalm 90. Moses says, Lord, praise, Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you were brought forth, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. We considered the finite nature of our lives, now the infinite nature of God. Rather than Moses avoiding God, he engages God. He doesn't turn his back, he faces him. The way that Moses deals with how small and finite he feels here is by appealing to God according to just how big and how infinite he is. Recently, a bunch of us played Capture the Flag over at the Mather's house. You're in the front row right here. Sorry, guys. And in case you don't know, the Mather's, they have a very large piece of property. It's wooded. It's flat in some places. It's sloping in others. Some places are very dense, densely wooded. Some are like wide open. And the parameters for the game that we played were pretty vast. And I would say completely unknown to me. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. We covered a lot of ground. And I was somehow appointed to be one of the captains. I don't know whose idea that was. I don't know that it was a good idea. And I got to make the first pick. Okay? So I got to pick the first of the whole bunch. You know, the prime person to assist me in Capture the Flag. And so who do you think I picked? Who do you think I picked? Do you think I picked one of my children? No, I didn't. No, I picked John. I picked John, the owner of the land. It's his place. It's his land. He knows it well. And he helped to set up the parameters for the game even. And he's an engineer on top of that. So, I mean, come on. I'd be a fool not to pick John. So I picked John. I'm sorry to be this. If you see where this comparison is going, I'm sorry to be comparing you to God, John. That's not fair. But in the face of how small and finite Moses feels, rather than putting his head in a hole and ignoring this painful reality, he boldly cries out to God with appeals to his greatness in his eternal nature. And he appeals to God's goodness. He says, have compassion on us. Have compassion on us. You know our situation. This is your land. You set this world up. Nothing escapes your notice. Nothing happens without your say-so. You know our afflictions. Have compassion on us.
Verse 14, he says, satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Verse 17, he prays, may the favor of the Lord rest on us. This word favor, it essentially means grace. Be gracious to us, God. Let your grace rest upon our small and finite lives. And David, he does the same thing. There's so many commonalities between these two passages. It's interesting that it's two different people who are writing them. David does the same. He comes to God slightly differently. David comes to God with his sin. David comes to God with his frailty. In verse 7, he says, this is Psalm 39, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Where else am I to go with my frailty? Where else am I to come with my sin? You're my only hope. David and Moses are walking circumspectly with God. They're attempting to live with their eyes and their minds and their hearts wide open to God, wide open to him, walking with him. Now, I've already gotten into it, I know, but how are we to live in light of these two things? I've talked about it a lot. How are we to live in light of these two things, the finite nature of our lives and the infinite nature of God? How do we do it? And what I really wanted to do with this last point is to come back to the start and to consider how the gospel gets some traction in this whole conversation that we're having here. Because once again, walking with God will always involve the gospel getting traction in our lives. So how does it get traction here? How does that work? Please look back with me at Psalm 39 once more. David ends the psalm by saying this, and I'm jumping into verse 12. David says, I am a sojourner with you, a guest like all my fathers. Look, this is interesting. Look away from me, he says, that I may smile again before I depart and am no more. And that's the end of the psalm. So these are some very interesting statements that he makes. What's reflected on in what he says here is what I think that you could call finite wisdom. Finite wisdom. There's some real insights here, but they're limited. Okay? He sees some things, but he doesn't see everything. Because we've been made in the image of our Creator, we too are infinite. I've talked about our finite nature, but because we're made in the image of God, we too are infinite. We're sojourners. We're pilgrims. We're travelers who have not found our way home. David wisely got that part right. One of the reasons why it's so difficult for us to live with the fact that we will all inevitably die one day is because it is so hard for us to imagine that there's more than just this life. That there's a life beyond this life. We're so busy worrying about this life. I mean, this is bringing us back to last week's message, right? So worried about what we're going to eat, how we're going to clothe ourselves, and the bills that we've got to pay, that we hardly have time or space to concern ourselves with the life to come, with what comes beyond this life. And there is some irony here. Coming back to last week, if you were here, this should remind you of Luke chapter 12. In fact, you may have thought to yourself, wait a second. I wonder if anybody thought this. Wait a second, Doug. Last week, Michael Leary was here telling us that we were not supposed to worry about tomorrow. And then here you are this week, and you're telling us that we need to be circumspect, that we need to be more mindful of the future, that we need to be thinking about tomorrow and the next world. And which is it? Make up your mind. You're confusing us. But actually, what we have here in Psalm 39, Psalm 90, and what we have in Luke 12, these things, they go hand in hand. They fit together perfectly. Jesus didn't tell us to forget about tomorrow, right? He told us what? He said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about tomorrow or the future. He said, don't worry about it. The thing that you need to worry about is me. You need to get turned around. You need to embrace a new mindset. You need a whole new mindfulness. Don't seek after the material things of this world as a way of somehow like satiating this like troubled, finite experience that you're having. Here's what he says. He says, instead, seek God's kingdom and these things will be added to you. And keep listening. Fear not, little flock. He knows that we're fearful about these things. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the needy, provide yourselves with money bags that don't grow old. What kind of money bags are those? With a treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And this right here, this is where the gospel begins to get traction in this conversation that we're having. And what Jesus ultimately does, how does he change the whole landscape? What Jesus ultimately does is he turns that last verse of Psalm 39, verse 13, he takes it and he completely turns it inside out. David says, look away from me that I may smile again before I depart and am no more. What the gospel teaches us is that the sinless and infinite creator took on flesh and became sin on our behalf. He took our sin upon himself so that rather than experiencing the smile of God, he experienced the eternal frown of God upon him. Why? So that God wouldn't need to look away from us, like David asked him to. So that God wouldn't need to look away from us. So that God could smile upon us. So that we could smile again. So that we could live and never depart and be no more. So that we could never need to depart from his presence. Jesus, the one who brought forth the world, that's how David puts it, from everlasting to everlasting, tasted the thing that we dread. He entered into the grave. But then he conquered it. We talk about this on Easter. We need to talk about it so much more than just on Easter. He conquered death. He vanquished the grave. Psalm 39 and 90 are rather gloomy. I said that already. But the gospel takes that gloominess and completely turns it inside out. If you are someone who turns these things around in your mind a lot, if I do, I think I have a bit of a gloomy personality. I tend to think about my mortality a lot. If you're like me, I'd encourage you to speak the gospel into those situations. If you don't know Jesus, I would encourage you, get turned around to him. We are infinite beings. We will live beyond death. Do you know him? Listen to this. I'll end with this quote. Listen to this quote. It's on your time reflection. It's at the bottom of the page. It comes from A.W. Tozer. I'll close with this and then I'll pray. He says it better than I could. How completely satisfying to turn from our limitations to a God who has none. Eternal years lie in his heart. For him, time does not pass, it remains. And those who are in Christ share with him all the riches of limitless time in endless years. God never hurries. There are no deadlines against which he must work. Only to know this is to quiet our spirits and relax our nerves. We pray. Father, would you cause us to be a people who walk with you circumspectly, that we would be mindful of our finite nature, that this life is brief, that we are a mere breath, that we're like a shadow, that the span of our life is like a handbreadth. But would you also make us mindful of Christ in our anxiety and our worry about these things, which is reasonable? Would you cause us to turn to him? Would you help us that our eyes and our minds and our hearts would be fully open to you, that we would get turned around by the voice of Jesus and his gospel? We pray that he would be high and lifted up in the remainder of our service. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.